Today is July 29th, 2015, and this is episode number 317 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, an itsy-bitsy, teeny-weeny yellow polka-dot bikini. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at acm@macobserver.com.
See, now you understand why everyone just wants to wear you.
I do. I've long understood this, though.
Yeah, it totally makes sense. And the visual in my mind...
Oh, it's a bad one.
Well, let's just say that it's probably for the best. This is an audio show.
Okay.
And I'll let you interpret that any way you want.
Fair enough, but I have only one interpretation for T-Mobile's news this week.
You totally caught me off guard with that segue. Do tell, Brian. What is your interpretation?
It's pretty badass.
Yeah.
So T-Mobile had two announcements this week. The first one, not so. I mean, all right. So the first one's is cool. We'll go with the least cool of the two cool announcements.
Okay.
T-Mobile added Apple Music to its Music Freedom thing, where the data from Apple Music does not count against your data limits on your account.
All right. So Apple Music is outside the data streaming cap on T-Mobile.
Yeah.
That's really cool. That's really cool.
It is cool. It's there were 32. Well, I think they actually added a couple this week, but I mean, so there are now 33 different streaming services that are covered under this. So this isn't some kind of Apple Music exclusive, but it's a good thing for Apple Music customers. And in that, I think Apple Music is already quite successful.
It sounds like Apple Music is pretty successful already. Yeah, I would agree.
10 million subscribers is what they already have, according to some third parties.
Now, the big thing will be what happens 3 months after the Apple Music launch.
Right.
How many do they have then?
No one's paying yet.
Right. However, that's a lot of people. And T-Mobile adding in Apple Music to make it sound clever, but I can't. Anyhow, they're no music cap data stuff. That's awesome.
No music cap
data. No data stuff. Cap music.
Wow.
Man,
are you like on allergy medicine?
Maybe a little.
All right, trick question. I knew you are. So listen, listeners, we're going to have a little fun with Jeff today. So just, you know, play along, nod your head, and smile as if everything is okay.
You know, you should be very proud of me because I didn't go down the temperature rabbit hole that I my toes were over the edge on that one.
Fair enough. All right. So it's a good thing. It's a good promotion for T-Mobile. I may be projecting here, but I'm about to take a road trip. And I was thinking about how I would do Apple Music. Like, do I want to get a new subscription to Sirius?
Mm-hmm.
Rich. All right. So my car has a Sirius, came with a Sirius radio, Sirius capable radio, right?
Right. So that means none of the joke channels.
Well, no, they have some joke channels too, but the satellite radio Sirius XM. Right. Service, right?
Right.
And I like Sirius XM, but I spend so little time in my car where, you know, I work out of the house. I live in a walking neighborhood. I spend so little time in my car. And when I'm in my car, I listen to the San Francisco public radio station because I'm old.
Yeah. Well, But we love you anyhow.
So, you know, I've never bothered to actually keep that subscription, you know, once my trial expired from when I got this car. And my point is, though, the one time I have renewed it or actually subscribed would be when I would take a road trip, because it's very nice to have access to music that's not necessarily in my library.
Right. It's also nice to be able to go through long stretches of nowhere exactly. and not hear static.
Exactly. You know, and sometimes I want to listen to albums. Sometimes I want to listen to my own playlist. Sometimes I want to listen to my tunes. But sometimes I just want to hear something that I don't know that I just don't know what's coming. Right. And so I've been debating this for the last couple of weeks, and I've got an iPad on T-Mobile. So now I'm just all stoked because I'm going to stream Apple Music through my
the speakers in your car, because it has Bluetooth.
Yeah, through my iPad.
Yes.
Because of T-Mobile.
I think this is awesome. And I think this is probably going to be a really cool alternative for a lot of people that are in the same boat as you, where they're trying to figure out, do I renew SiriusXM or not?
Oh, and people who I mean, you know, streaming music is getting bigger and bigger, right? But it's still, I don't think it's reached that point where it's the thing that everyone does. It's increasingly a thing that people do. But as more and more people do it, and considering how much music we listen to on our mobile devices, not having to worry about your data cap while you're listening to it, you know, Apple Music or one of the 32 other streaming services that they support, including Spotify and Radio, Spotify, Radio, Pandora, etc. It's a big competitive edge for T-Mobile, and it certainly puts pressure on the larger carriers in the U.S. to cater to this too.
That's the thing that has me pretty excited, because T-Mobile has been setting the trends in services and deals that the other carriers are now following.
Right, like AT&T followed. I think it was just originally called the Uncarrier plan, where you stop paying for your device once you've actually paid for it.
Right.
Right. And AT&T does that with its next plan now. AT&T would never have done that without T-Mobile.
And no, of course not.
And it's because T-Mobile is able to get subscribers with this stuff.
Right. Yeah. And if AT&T and Verizon went to keep their subscribers, as long as they're in areas where there's also T-Mobile service, well, then they need to match these plans.
Right. Yeah. So this is good for consumers, and it's a further commoditization of mobile bandwidth, mobile data. And that's good for consumers too.
Yes. Yes, it is. And you know, the more I'm thinking about it, the more I'm thinking that Apple Music ultimately becomes a much better deal than SiriusXM. Because most people don't have the headpieces that mount in the dashboard for SiriusXM and then pop out and go into your house so that you listen there too.
Mm-hmm.
But with Apple Music, you have your iPhone or your iPad with you both places. So there you go. You've got that. You don't need to get the special SiriusXM radio head to move around with you. Just use what you already have.
It's true. It's true. So, yeah, this is good for consumers. Whether or not you're a T-Mobile customer, this is good for consumers. It's good for music fans. It's good for T-Mobile, for whatever that's worth. And it's also good for Apple. It's good for Apple to be a part of this. And I'm wondering, what kind of impact it'll have. We'll have to wait and see.
Yeah. Well, we have month and a half. That's about how much is left on the three-month free trial?
God, has it been 6 weeks?
Well, you're asking the guy that's on allergy meds right now, who's watching a window kind of float across his Mac display.
Yeah.
When I know it's not really floating.
Giddy up. It's been close to a month and a half at least, so that's a good point.
Yeah, so there we go. 6 weeks from now, then we'll be able to start talking about if the T-Mobile no cap thingy is good for Apple Music.
Right. Right. All right. So now we have the the important news from T-Mobile. I mean, that's good stuff, right? For, you know, for a lot of companies that, you know, you could go ahead and announce that and call it a day.
But no, T-Mobile, they're kind of wild and crazy.
Yeah, Jean,
he's Jean-Luc Picard.
It's John Laguerre. And for some reason, he looks kind of weird. So, you know, like I always want to make him like French or something, like his name. But having actually listened to him speak, I realize he's American as can be.
Well, when you quote things from him, I want you to use your really bad French accent anyhow.
Mais oui, that's what I said. Just swap it out and pay nothing more.
I
love this show.
So what he said was so ridiculous. T-Mobile is going to let customers who are on the, I've got to get the full name here, Jump on Demand customers. That's the name of the...
Oh, I laugh only because I know that's exactly how you should say it based on the punctuation.
Yeah, which reminds me, my ex-wife had a shirt from Japan that said, was Jump, Blue Soup, Alive. And I think each one of them had an exclamation point. Because Japan, you can find essentially nonsensical strings of English words on Japanese shirts, or at least you could back in the 10-13 years ago.
You still can. I recently saw a photo of a Japanese family. So it's like the parents and the kids. So it's like young kids, like 5 years old.
Uh-huh.
And they're all wearing hats that the only word on the front is the F-bomb. And they don't know what it means. It's just American words.
She saw someone with a shirt that said Fudge Packer on it. The other F word. Which, by the way, do you remember in the 80s when we all had, when Japanese like headbands and t-shirts were popular with the metal crowd?
Yeah, I can only imagine what words were on those.
I can only imagine what the heck we were running around with on our clothes at that time. And it's before the age of the internet. Anyway, her shirt said, Jump, Alive, Blue Soup.
That's awesome.
Three sentences. Jump, Alive, Blue Soup.
That is awesome.
So, Jump, on demand.
Blue Soup.
Exactly. Should we actually say what the heck they announced?
I think we should find a site where we can buy the Jump Alive Blue Soup shirt.
I'll see if she wants to sell it. How's that? So you can buy an iPhone 6 this summer. Now, the summer is still going on. We've got a few more weeks this summer. I think summer ends in September.
Yeah, in September.
Yeah, so get a new smartphone for zero out of your pocket with qualifying credit and zero sales tax due today, followed by one low monthly payment that includes the cost of that smartphone, and for free, the ultimate freedom to upgrade whenever you want. What they're going to let you do is get an iPhone 6 this summer. And assuming that Apple introduces a new iPhone this fall, which, you know, Apple's going to introduce a new smartphone this fall, probably the iPhone 6S.
Probably.
If we're just going to go ahead and judge this by the last several years of reality. T-Mobile will let you swap it out for whatever Apple announces for free.
So you can... just to make sure I've got it straight, you can buy an iPhone 6 or 6 Plus today, and in essentially a month and a half, just give it back and get the new phone that replaces it.
Correct.
No extra cost.
Correct.
Holy crap.
So if you like, you know, because what happens, so many thoughts. It always shocks me how many iPhones Apple sells in the third quarter, Apple's fiscal third quarter, which is the June quarter.
Mm-hmm.
And, or I'm sorry, the, what am I thinking of? The September quarter. because Apple.
Oh wait, yeah, you're right. September quarter.
The quarter that Apple is going to release a new device. They always sell a lot of the previous devices. I don't understand. It's like, I mean, is there anything more mainstream than an Apple rumor today?
No, they are so mainstream that Apple rumors are reported on local television stations on a regular basis. I mean,
you would think that Apple would sell all of its iPhones the first 6 months after they're announced.
And then everyone would just sit and wait for the next phone.
Right, but that's not what happens. Apple continues to sell a ton of them. And I mean, you know, of course, a lot of this is because people need phones and people need they need phones.
And their plans are coming due at different times.
Yep, exactly. You know, sometimes you lose your phone, you break your phone. You just can't deal with it anymore, and you don't care that Apple's, and the reality, I guess, is that most people just, they're not as tied into the upgrade cycles as you and I are, as people who write about Apple and are fans of Apple's products, and of course, the same way that our listeners are.
Yeah, that's true.
That's the only thing that can really explain it.
Yeah, I do know people that think Apple's upgrade cycle is like really weird. I mean, I've had people that seriously thought that buying the first Apple Watch when it came out was stupid because this October they'll release a second version, just like they've done with every other product they've made, to which I cock my head to the side and do the dog sound, because that's not how it works. But there are people out there that think stuff like that. So, yeah.
It could. It wouldn't surprise me if surprise me to see a new Apple Watch.
I'd be very surprised to see a new Apple Watch this October.
Watch OS 2,
yep, we know that's coming. But I'd be really surprised to see new hardware that quickly.
We saw new hardware very quickly with the first iPhone. It was very quickly.
It was still about a year, though.
Wow, there was one... iPhone.
There was with the first iPhone, they dropped the 4 gig model. They changed the pricing, and all that stuff happened within like the first 3 months. And they had to do some backtracking to make people happy.
Yeah.
And then we did have the iPad 3 to iPad 4. Thing, which was several months apart, but that was done primarily just to get the Lightning connector on the iPad 3.
Yeah.
So that doesn't count as like a new product upgrade.
Yeah. When was the iPhone 3G announced? It was announced in June. All right, so the first one was definitely... a year. When was the 3GS announced? June.
Are you looking in Mac Tracker? Because that would be the brilliant thing to do.
I'm looking at the iPhone wiki. That's what came up on the Googles.
You and your crazy internets.
Could have sworn. All right, let's just for the sake of argument say that I'm wrong and move on and get back to our topic.
All right, that makes it a lot easier. So, anyhow,
the thing about Apple Watch is that yes, it shipped in April. But it was announced in September.
Yeah, but that's not when it shipped.
Yeah.
I don't think we're still all the way back on topic yet, are we?
No.
We're getting closer.
We're sidling up to it. We're sidling up to that topic. What was the topic? What were we talking about?
Yeah, you don't want to rush into this stuff too fast.
We're talking about the upgrade cycle. So yeah, Apple T-Mobile. Always sells a bunch of iPhones in the quarter before, but certainly there are people that sit waiting to see what's going to come out. They sit and wait. There are definitely people that do that. I remember there was one year in particular where Tim Cook said that rumors killed sales in the weeks leading up to the release of something or other.
Oh, yes, I remember that.
Right. So, I mean, people do. I mean, it shocks me that they sell any. There are certainly people that are waiting. And T-Mobile is wanting to capitalize on that. And they're going to capitalize on it by letting you get an iPhone 6 now and then be able to swap. I mean, that's just crazy. That's crazy awesome.
It is crazy awesome. And all I can figure is that they have an insanely awesome partner for refurbished iPhones.
Yes, they must. But you know, where they're counting on making money, of course, is increasing their subscriber count.
Right.
Right. And because they're not, I mean, I would imagine that some of their thoughts shifted when they first moved to the idea that once you pay for your phone, you don't keep paying. Yeah, this was a major profit center for carriers for a long time because people wouldn't upgrade their phones.
And they'd continue to pay for the phone as if it wasn't paid off.
Right. Well, more specifically, we were all trained to think that you know, a lot of it really wasn't until the iPhone that a lot of people were first exposed to the idea that the subsidized price was not the price of the device.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And with we were trained to think that the subsidized money that you're paying into your monthly contract, we were trained not to think of that as paying for the subsidy. We were trained to think of that's just what it costs.
Right, which was awesome for AT&T back then.
And Verizon.
Because, yeah, well, initially on AT&T, we paid full price for iPhones. They were not subsidized.
Well, I'm thinking of all phones, though. All phones were like this.
Yes.
All phones were subsidized. Well, almost all phones were subsidized. And you would keep paying that. You know, you would be eligible to get a subsidized price on a new device roughly in 2 years. And not everybody would upgrade every 2 years. And you just keep paying that same amount. And you know, there's that point at which that part of your phone bill becomes pure 100% profit for the phone companies.
Right, which for AT&T, it was in the beginning. Because that first iPhone, where we didn't pay a subsidized price, we were not getting a discount on our phone bill. So we were paying for a subsidy anyhow. That was straight profit for them.
Right. Right, okay. It was, and I see your point, but this was how the my umbrella point here is that this is how the entire industry worked with all devices.
Right. And my point is I was just complaining for a moment.
Yeah, fair enough.
So carry on.
So T-Mobile's thought process on this may have shifted once they stopped looking at that period after devices paid for as a profit center. They may think a lot differently about what they're willing to do to capture that customer.
Yeah, I'm sure you're right.
And you know, oh, and this could also be this isn't forever, at least not now. This was announced now. If you buy an iPhone 6 this summer, you can upgrade to whatever Apple does this fall as long as you do the upgrade before the end of the year.
Yeah, that's a pretty cool deal.
It's a pretty good deal, and it's, I have a point. It's just on the tip of my tongue.
I can't wait.
So exciting. We're so professional.
Hey, at least I have an excuse today.
It's true. I don't have an excuse today. Of course, I seldom have an excuse. This is an opportunity for T-Mobile to maybe capture a lot of customers. You know, it's like a little window here.
It wouldn't surprise me because it's a crazy good deal.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, like, just think about it. So you can go ahead, like, you know, you need a new phone and you're just holding out. And, you know, I know people that will, they'll hold out for 9 months. They'll hold up for, you know, they want to wait and see what Apple's going to announce. And, but, you know,
and they'll even do that with broken screens on their phones.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, no, I'm going to wait. Well, you could do it risk-free.
I think it's a brilliant plan.
Yeah, it's brilliant for us. It's a good, you know, T-Mobile is the underdog. You know, they're I forget which is smaller than them or Sprint, but, you know, really Verizon and Ma Bell are the two biggies.
Yep.
And Sprint and T-Mobile both lag way behind. But T-Mobile has been able to grow with all the stuff that Jean is doing. And, you know, it's been working for him.
Yeah, it looks like it has. And ultimately, that works for us, because if you're going to T-Mobile, well, you get the great deals. If you're sticking with AT&T and Verizon, eventually they're having to capitulate and offer similar deals or risk losing customers.
Yeah, this definitely makes me consider switching.
Yeah, I keep thinking about it too.
I've been really happy with, I've been really happy with my T-Mobile iPad, but that is different than a phone. It's not like AT&T. I don't know. I get change resistant to things like this. It's like, you know, I started off with AT&T when they were the only people supporting the iPhone. I'm going to support them.
You know, it may be as simple as sticking with the devil you know and the issues that you already know how to deal with, as opposed to risking a new devil and new problems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, plus, you know, I had the Microsoft for a long time, but now actually I moved about 6-7 months ago, and I don't need the Microsoft here.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so having the Microsoft was a reason to stick with AT&T.
Yeah, the microcell
the microcell should have been a reason to leave AT&T, but whatever.
Yeah, well, you know, where I am, the microcell is a reason to stay with AT&T, because cell coverage in Boulder is so bad. It doesn't matter what carrier you have. Mm. So I have a leg up on a lot of other people because I have my own private cell tower sitting here in my office.
Why? You know, Boulder's population density is pretty high.
Yes.
So what's the problem?
The problem is getting city council to approve putting new towers up. So we have these crazy bad dead spots all over the city.
People's Republic of Boulder.
Yep. They allow me to live here because it fits in with some sort of equal opportunity thing.
You're referring to an economic equal opportunity thing as opposed to a racial thing, because Boulder's right. Boulder's pretty white.
Yeah, Boulder is pretty white. Yeah, but they're like, oh, yeah, you don't make nearly as much money as a lot of these other people, and oh, and you don't smoke weed. We need one of those in town.
That's good stuff.
Yeah, so they let me stay.
What do you think, listeners? Should we get Jeff hopped up on allergy medication more often?
Yeah, let us know.
Let us know. ACM.
ACM at macobserver.com.
All right. We got several pieces of listener mail.
We did, which is totally awesome.
Yeah. Why don't we, you want to talk about that stuff, or should we just mention it and then move on?
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for the letters, guys. Right. You rock.
Crawl. K-R-A-L-L-L. Actually, it's dot crawl. Which I'm very, very curious about.
I think that makes him an invisible crawl.
It could be, yes. That's funny. He asked, could the reason Slice is showing decline, we're referring to the Slice data showing that Apple Watch sales had declined in June, and then Apple saying that that they had more sales in June. He said, could the reason Slice is showing decline of the Apple Watch versus Apple saying sales were higher in June to the Slice subscribers Could it be attributed to the fact that it's Sly subscribers? If the majority of their subscribers bought watches early on, they wouldn't necessarily be buying additional ones. And I'm sure that not all Apple customers have subscribed to Sly, so they wouldn't have all the numbers. Generally speaking, statistics don't work that way. And extrapolating results for the population at large don't work that way. And the chances that all of Slice's customers all bought their Apple Watches early seems pretty slim to none for me.
You know, even if they bought their watches early, that's not the same as paying for them early, because there's a lot of people that bought early and didn't get charged until later because of when their watch actually shipped.
Well, it's true, but they would have gotten the receipt. So, you know, Slice is measuring receipts. Apple is reporting sales. So if anything, no, I don't think that is it all possible here. I mean, you know, data analysis and statistics and all of that stuff doesn't work that way. And it's not as if Slice's subscriber base is a steady state thing either. You know, people are going to drop in and come on board and drop out constantly.
Right. And their subscriber base that they're pulling from is all in the United States, as I believe.
I believe that is the case. Now, mind you, we don't know what their methodology is. It's possible, by the way, that they're just a bunch of chuckleheads and I've been an idiot for buying into anything that they're saying whatsoever. That's entirely possible. I just don't think it's the case.
Yeah, it seems like one of those things where if they were continually offering up bad data, that they'd lose clients.
Well, they're relatively new. So, you know, like I said, we don't really know. It is possible that they're chuckleheads and they're just making stuff up. It's possible.
It's possible.
I just don't think it's the case. I think that there's something to their data. And the more I've thought about it since we talked about it and since we wrote about it, the more I think that Tim Cook saying that sales were higher in June is a bit of a misdirection, whether intentional or not. I think that's when most of the stainless steel watches shipped, and that's when they caught up to their back orders. And
so in that sense, he's telling the truth, but it's also a little misleading.
It's maybe misleading. There's no chance that he wasn't telling the truth. Tim Cook is not going to lie during a conference call.
No, he's not going to lie. Of course not. But he didn't say anything to clarify what the sales were from, just leaving us to speculate. So it may very well be that it's what you just said. This is when the sales caught up.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, and when Apple actually gives us numbers, we'll know and we can cease this ridiculous speculation. It's ridiculous because we're all interested in this stuff, so it's not ridiculous to speculate about it. The need to speculate about it is ridiculous. Apple should bloody well release numbers so that we know how the Apple Watch is doing, because they're a big company and everybody cares about this stuff.
Yep.
And this... I'm shaking my finger. You should probably see it through glass, but, you know.
I can totally see it. That's why I'm laughing. The stern look on your face... that goes with it, your furrowed brow and your frown that you're trying to keep as a frown, but it's almost turning into a smile. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's me. Yep. So I got some anecdotal evidence. I think you got some anecdotal evidence about additional, more Apple stores where the Apple Watch stands are comparatively vacant mm-hmm. at the Apple stores. Kind of, again, backing up my concern about all this in the first place. But we got our dear, dear, dear friend. Is there anybody on the planet better than Barry Falk?
That's a really tough question. I haven't met everyone, but the bar is so high.
It is.
Thanks to Barry.
Right. I haven't met everybody yet either. I haven't met all of the people, but Barry is a good guy.
He's a really good guy.
He's a really, really good guy. Anyway, he sent us an anecdotal report from San Antonio where he said that he saw some people at the Apple store, in one of the Apple stores in San Antonio, said there was like six people at the stand over a 5-minute period at one point. I mean,
yeah, but I think it's important to note the time of day those six people were there. It was relatively early, so like an hour after they opened in the morning,
right?
On a weekday,
right?
When most people are at work,
and there were people in line when the store first opened. He said two people went straight to the stand. He went away and he came back about 40 minutes later. There were about six people there over a 5-minute period. I mean, really, for an Apple Watch store, for an Apple store, that's just still not busy. It's just still not busy, man.
It's still not busy, but considering the time of day and the number of people that were in the store, when he was there, there was a surprising percentage that were looking at Apple Watches. But I know it's all numbers, and in the grand scheme of things, it's not a lot of people. Just for that time of day, it was a higher percentage of people than other things.
Right. And it is. I'm not dismissing it because, actually, I'm not dismissing it at all. These are all just anecdotal data points.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm looking for, what I'm really hoping though for, is like, yeah, I was in an Apple store, and then the Apple Watch store was just as packed as the rest of the place. Couldn't get up and see one. And I've yet to hear a report from that. Every time I get a picture, it's always like emptier. There's like two people standing there.
Yeah. That's what I have seen a lot.
Neil, the noted architect, Pan.
Hey, wait. I have to point out the signature in Barry's email is so awesome. Sent from the wall via Raven.
That is, I can't believe I missed that.
I can't believe you missed it either.
I can't believe that I totally read right past that. So anyway, Neil sent us photographs from the Apple store at Stone Ridge Mall. Store is very busy. There's like four people looking at the Apple Watch. Definitely looking intently, although no one's... Well, they're all looking through the glass stand. He said the Apple Watch table, this is all via Twitter, is one of the least used tables in the store. Traffic, he said, was certainly fluctuating. He sent another photograph of no one at the demonstration table. Anecdotal evidence supports what Sly says. That's a fact.
Right. And it's also a fact that Tim Cook would not lie during a...
Absolutely not.
Yeah. Earnings report call. Yeah.
He's not only is he an honest person, he's always presented himself with great integrity. But there's also legal ramifications, regulations that cover what can be said and said not said.
Right. He is not going to cross that line.
No, of course not. Absolutely not. Now, Brad Hurley wrote us thanking us for talking about his last letter, but he also asked us to talk about Mastered for Apple and whether or not it matters and whether or not it's going to catch on. And this would be the iTunes effort to work with labels and musicians to have songs remastered specifically for iTunes, which really means specifically for AAC for listening through digital playback.
Mm-hmm.
And he gave us an impassioned commentary on why he likes music that sounds good. Thumbs up, brother.
Thumbs up.
Hashtag LOL.
The whole Mastered for Apple thing, I'm glad it's here, and I would love to see more albums. Yeah. Now, as far as does it matter? Yeah, I think it matters because there's a lot of people that want to have the best audio quality they can get mm-hmm. for their music.
Yeah, most people don't care, and that's fine.
Yeah. And there's a lot of people that don't have speakers, headphones, or earbuds that are good enough to hear the difference. Yeah. So for those people, it doesn't matter. But for those of us that have some serious listening gear, it makes a difference. And it's refreshing to listen to a Mastered for Apple album because I think the audio quality is better.
I was listening to Fragile, a couple tunes off Fragile from Yes.
Uh-huh.
And in particular, I was listening to Roundabout. And I was listening to it through good quality headphones. And it was interesting to me to realize how, I mean, there was tape hiss. It's always interesting. You take things for granted, right? When you listen to, especially with music, when you listen to it a lot, you take it for granted. This is, mm-hmm. this is a listening fact. And, gotta mute my Apple Watch. But when you listen to it in a new way, sometimes you don't take it for granted. At least that's the case for me. So I haven't listened to Yes, and not seriously, in, I don't know, 20 years. Mm-hmm. But I've had like several of their 70s tunes on my mind lately. And now that I have Apple Music, I went looking for them. And I was kind of surprised at how low the fidelity was. And I was also surprised, this is not really Apple or technology related, but I heard like some mistakes.
Which is kind of crazy. I mean, a studio album, should not have mistakes.
A studio album from Yes. I mean, those people are just amazing, amazing mm-hmm. musicians. I mean, the stuff they do is crazy good. But when, you know, I've never noticed. And they're tiny mistakes, just timing issues is all. And it's the kind of thing today that would be edited out in Pro Tools or Logic. And mm-hmm. but you know, back then it was good enough to go. Giddy up.
You're right.
So anyway, my point is that I would like to hear a Mastered for iTunes or a Mastered for Apple version of that album.
Actually, that would be pretty cool.
Yeah, I would like to hear that. All right. So thumbs up, Brad, on liking quality. I personally hope that Mastered for Apple takes off and becomes a better and better deal. You know, iTunes LP. Mm-hmm. I was really hoping that would take off and be a really big thing too, and it wasn't.
No, it did not take off at all.
Not at all. But I think part of that's because I don't really think Apple put it. You know, it seemed like it was one of those many things that Steve was all keen on, but then he got interested in something else and so stopped thinking about it or worrying about it.
You know, that's been a big problem for Apple for a very long time.
Well, technically, it hasn't been for the last 3 years.
That's true.
But, you know, we will see. Yeah. Yeah. So we'll see what happens with Mastered for Apple. I certainly hope it becomes a big deal. And then did we also see we got the
Alex.
Alex. Yeah. Alex tried to post a comment. We've had a problem with our comment engine. Sometimes they don't go through. He was backing up the thesis on June sales. Then he also pointed out something about iTunes searches.
And what he pointed out on iTunes searches turned out to be so awesome for me. So thank you, Alex. Yeah. And now we could be total jerks and not tell everyone what he told us.
Tell him. Go ahead.
Okay. So what he did was he talked about how when you're doing searches from the search field in iTunes on your Mac, that you can click the little magnifying glass so you get the drop-down menu, so that you can refine your search or limit it to a certain thing. Well, by default, it's set to search all music.
Right, which is one reason why I would get popped over to podcasts when I was searching for something where I had a podcast. And
right.
I was all prissy about my view being changed on me.
Right. And here's a place where Apple has totally fallen down on user interface because all the other options are grayed out when you drop down that menu. So it appears like you just have no choices.
Well, not only are they grayed out, you only get it when you click the magnifying glass. You do not get those options if you just click in the search field. I don't like that.
Right.
I think that's a fail.
And that's a fail across almost all of Apple's apps because that's exactly how they all work. Which is lame. I consider it a fail because most people don't even realize that you have that option to refine a search by clicking on the magnifying glass after you start typing something.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyhow, that search all music option that's checked. If you click on it, it unchecks it.
Yeah, it's
and then all the other options come to life.
Search entire library.
Yeah, search entire library.
Right. And if you check that off, you then have the ability to limit your search by, if you're, for instance, with music, all song, album, artist, and composer. But then it does something else.
And this is the part where I sat back and pretended to do a little happy dance in my seat. And what happens when you uncheck that search entire library option, instead of getting all your results in that totally useless for me drop down menu thing that pops out of the search field, it takes all your search results and just groups them together in the main music window where they're far more useful to you. It's a beautiful thing. And that made me so happy when I saw that.
Yeah, that is a lot. It's what I want from search. So I check that off. So great tip, Alex. Thank you very much. So to sort of sum that up, if you uncheck the search entire library option, which is on by default,
searches in iTunes suddenly become useful again.
Yeah, because your search results appear in the main iTunes view as opposed to the pop-down menu that is all but useless in my opinion.
Yeah. It's nothing but a frustrating, horrible thing. What I was doing before Alex pointed this out, I would create smart playlists and do searches there.
Oh, wow.
Because I could actually get useful information doing that. But what a pain in the butt.
That's just crazy.
This is much, much better.
Much, much, much better. Now, something else that is much, much better. MacObserver.com/Amazon.
Yeah, that is really cool. And it's really cool because it helps us and you still get to buy cool stuff.
Yeah. So if you shop at Amazon, go to MacObserver.com/Amazon and click through to our affiliate link. Now, we whenever we link to anything at Amazon, we use our affiliate links and we get a little percentage back from Amazon, and that money helps fund what we do. It's an important aspect of us as an online publication, and we have gotten a lot of support from our readers over the years. But now there's an easy way for you to do it. MacObserver.com/Amazon takes you to a page where you can go straight to the Amazon store. Yeah, it's not an auto redirect to Amazon or anything like that.
No, it takes you to a page where you see the big Amazon link. Click on that. Yeah. And now when you make your purchase, then we're going to get a percentage of that from Amazon, which is great because that's how we can afford to pay writers and to make podcasts.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And we're going to continue to include direct affiliate links to products all the time. But we have this landing page for you now that's super easy to remember. MacObserver.com/Amazon. We would appreciate it if you would use it and, tell your friends. And it doesn't cost you anything at all. Nothing changes for you except for the fact that Amazon knows that we sent you to them.
Right. And then we get a little money for
it. Yeah. And they pay us for having done that, which is
pretty cool.
Giddy up.
Yeah. So go buy stuff, people.
Consumerism. Yay.
Yay.
Where did the audience come from?
We've always had a studio audience. It's just they finally woke up because they're like, wait, is Jeff on drugs?
Consumerism. Yay. All right. So let's see here. You went on a bit of a tear this week about fitness trackers.
I did. But it was a good tear. Okay. So the scoop is that there was this lawsuit that was brought against Nike and Apple by a bunch of consumers for misleading consumers into thinking that the Nike Fuel Band was more accurate at tracking your fitness activities than it actually is. So in the end, Apple is not having to do anything in the lawsuit, and Nike agreed to pay out, it's like $2.4 million as a settlement, so that people that bought Fuel Bands between a certain time frame get some money back.
Get their Nickel 95 That's, back.
Yeah, actually, they $15 or $25 if they take a Nike gift card.
Okay.
So, you know, it's that, okay, well, that's great. And that's fine. But the thing that that stood out for me in all of this is that there are people, most people, that are going out and buying fitness trackers. And they are assuming, based on everything they're hearing and everything that they're being told, that these devices are dead on accurate. And so they expect that accuracy, but it's not really there. So this whole Nike lawsuit is sort of like pulling back the veil and showing that the information that our fitness trackers collect may not be nearly as accurate as we think.
That makes sense.
It makes sense. And on one hand, that really sucks. But on the other hand, it's important to look at this and figure out how to interpret the data that we are getting in a meaningful way. And for me, the thing is, you look at the trends that you see on your fitness tracker. So if you have a day where the step count isn't nearly as high, okay, that tells you that you haven't been walking around as much as you usually do. It's time to go outside and take a walk and get that step count number back up. And, you know, so things like that. If you see a really high number, okay, great. You're doing better than you normally do today. So you can watch long-term trends and you can watch throughout the week and get ideas about if you're more active or less active.
Well,
go ahead.
Actually, if you have another salient point, I will wait because I was going to kind of do an umbrella thing there.
Okay, do your umbrella.
Well, there's two things here. One is that it's the relative performance that really matters for most of us. Professional yes. athletes, okay, fine.
And professional athletes are using different types of devices than the Fitbit, the Fuel Band.
Right. For you and me, the relative data is what is most important. I am more active, I am less active, whatever.
Yes. And actually, that's how the Misfit Shine works. They totally took out the interface showing how many steps you're doing every day. And they look at it from, I call it the holistic view. You're more active, you're less active.
Okay, that makes sense. And then the second point is that, again, for normal folks who aren't professional athletes, the tiny percentage that these devices aren't precisely accurate doesn't matter. Like one of the photographs you put in your piece shows two devices.
Yes, a Fitbit One and an Apple Watch.
Well, and the Fitbit One says 9,589 steps, and the Apple Watch says 9,630 steps for a grand total of 41 steps difference between the two because they're interpreting the data they have
a little bit differently.
41 divided by, we'll go with 9589, is 0.0. It's a 0.5%. It's less than 0.5%. It's 0.0.
Now, keep in mind, this is after I took the time to properly calibrate my Apple Watch. So with that, and I've been using the Fitbit for a very long time. So what that tells me is that when my devices are calibrated properly, my Fitbit One and my Apple Watch are showing relatively the same level of accuracy.
Right. Right. And it's 0.4% difference. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter to the vast majority of us. Just focus on more activity and use these things relatively. And, you know, this stuff isn't magic. It doesn't magically know that we're walking or running or whatever. It's taking movement data for something that, like in the case of your Apple Watch, it's at the end of your wrist.
Right. Yeah, my Fitbit One is clipped to my waistband, so it's not getting nearly as much movement.
Yeah,
the Apple Watch, it's just flailing around because, well, apparently I'm spastic when I run.
Right. I mean, I walk differently when I'm climbing stairs, when I'm going down the stairs, when I'm walking down the hall, when I'm walking down the sidewalk, when I am carrying a bag or not carrying a bag, when I'm carrying milk or not. I mean, there's just like all of this stuff that all of these fitness trackers can do is pretty amazing, but it's never been precisely accurate at the consumer level. I'm not going to ding Fitbit or Nike or Apple or anyone on this stuff because I think it's amazing what they can do.
Yes, I think it's absolutely amazing. So I have some advice. And my advice is, if you're looking at using a fitness tracker, talk to your friends, find out what they're using, look at websites like, well, look at like Amazon reviews.
Yeah, or maybe read Jeff's reviews, because Jeff happens to probably be one of the top experts on the planet on this stuff at this point.
Oh, that's very nice of you.
Yeah, take some ownership, brother.
So, yeah, I do have quite a few here that I've been playing with and testing, and I'll have more results for you guys soon. But, yeah, try something out if you can, and find the one that works for you. And that's what really matters. Find the thing that works for you. In my case, back in the day, it was the Fitbit Ultra. Mm-hmm. And I bought that, and I really credit that, and then later the Fitbit One, when that came out, with helping me make my weight loss happen. And I lost a lot of weight. And I really, really don't think that would have happened at all if I wasn't using a Fitbit. It gave me a sense of personal accountability. Yeah. And it gave me something that that showed me just very plainly when I wasn't being active. And I needed that, because there were many times where I thought that I was being very active on a day, and I'd look at what my step count was, and it'd be like 1,200. And I just have the 10,000 step a day goal. So when I saw those really low numbers, it helped me realize and then become more aware of the times that I'm not being active. And I wouldn't have been able to do that otherwise.
And as wearable computing continues to proliferate, this stuff is going to only become more accurate. But I don't know. I think this lawsuit was largely frivolous. But I guess it is a good point that people do know exactly what's going on.
Yeah, on one level, this lawsuit was frivolous. On another level, these people were essentially being misled, because there was no one telling them that the accuracy of these devices was not at the level that they expected or thought.
Yeah, fair enough. But, you know, really, does it matter? I mean, did this really affect anyone? Did this really truly have an impact on anyone's existence? I would doubt that.
Probably not. I mean, from the big overview standpoint, no, probably not.
I'll give you a hypothetical scenario where it might have. So two degenerate gamblers make a prop bet that they can travel X far in X amount of time, and then proceed to test to put the bet into effect, and one declares a winner based on his Nike Fuel Band, and then the other guy has some sort of high-end satellite-based thing that
like one of the Garmin trackers, wrist trackers,
right, that that disproves by a number of like 10 steps that the other degenerate gambler didn't actually meet the terms of the bet. And so, you know, there's a hypothetical scenario where someone's life might actually have been affected by this.
Okay. I just came up with another one that's probably slightly more plausible.
All right.
If you're doing strict calorie counting and you were relying on the calorie count that the fuel band said you were burning, it was just off. Mm. It was for practical purposes, you should not use a fuel band for calorie counting.
Yeah, all right, fair enough.
So, but you know, if you're someone that's watching your calories that closely, it probably doesn't matter what the fuel band says. You're probably doing things to make sure you're eating healthier anyhow.
Well, you know, and if Nike was telling people that it was precisely accurate when it's not, I mean, that's definitely a problem. I just don't think anyone was actually affected by this, which is probably why it was settled for only $2.4 million.
Probably. And, but on the other hand, it created an opportunity for us to sit here and talk about this and educate some more people and hopefully keep some people that were thinking, oh, never mind, I'm just not going to get a fitness tracker and I really don't need to get healthy. Maybe now some of those people are going to go ahead and do it anyhow. Well, and
anything that gives us the opportunity to wank poetic is good.
That's right.
You gonna let that slide?
Yep. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. And hey, thanks for listening.
Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly, the basis by Boom Recorded, just for us. And that's all for this week.
And as always, stay subscribed because you never know what I'm going to say next week.
Never know. But we will see you online at the Mac Observer. Make sure you check out macobserver.com/Amazon. It's an easy way to shop at Amazon through our affiliate account.